Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Sam Jackson, she, her, is back on the pod. We talk about appropriation of names. Is it okay if certain cultures name their kids from other cultures? Is it homage? Is it appropriation? How do we feel? We talk Donnagate. Dun, dun, dun. There has been a handful of messages from a certain sect of folks who are not approving of our usage of Donna to refer to the soon-to-be former president of the United States. What's that about? What does the data tell us? In the main event, we talk about the relationship between racism and economics. Economics was the number one issue for the election and tends to be in almost every election. And so as we continue to draw the parallels between economics and any of the progressive issues that we are championing and bringing to the forefront, today, we draw the parallels to how racism affects economics, the amount of money that we lose because of racism, and historically where this all has come from. Yes, we're going to econ class. Get your calculators, get your pens and papers because class is in session. Let's go right now on an all new Minority Corner. Let's learn, laugh, and play. So we're going to talk, so I've been getting emails, and by emails, I mean like three or four.
But
this is not, if you've sent me the email, thank you for, you know, taking the time. This is me not, you know, coming at you. Like, this is, that's not what this is for. If you've sent these emails, it means other people might be having these thoughts, and I want to put something to rest. Donnagate.
Bum, bum, bum.
So, you were here when the term Donna was coined and we had a laugh and a giggle.
Yes.
And we start. I just saw you flash back to that moment when we laughed.
It was fantastic.
It was, yeah. We had a great time. You meet Sarah Brown, our editor, the whole gang was here. And I had confessed something that had been in my mind for the past like four, almost 5 years, that every time I hear Donald Trump, I hear Donna Trump, because the L does not, I don't hear it. People go fast with the L, Donald Trump. I hear Donna, or maybe it's what I wanted to hear, because for me, the name Donna, I'm sorry if your name is Donna, but listen, we all, James and the Giant Peach, we all got it. We all got it. Sam Jackson, snakes on the plane.
Listen. Now we want to talk about her.
For me, I grew up watching Donna Martin on 90210, Tori Spelling, the name Donna, which is always really funny to me. So we had a laugh and a giggle, and we called it, because like always wanting to find a name for Donald Trump, and that wasn't his actual name, didn't want to give him any power. And so we giggled about calling him Donna, because it was a way to take him down, because he would lose his shit if he heard someone calling him a woman. Nothing about we, hello, if you've been listening to this podcast, we love, like, I don't even, it's a weird thing to explain. We love women. Like, what? Like, we champion, of course. Like, it's the well, sky is blue. Also, like,
also in the episode, you specifically stopped and said, I want to be clear.
This
is not a knock to women.
I did it.
Love women. There are two women on our team. You know what I mean? Like, it's like most of our team is female. Like,
yes.
This whole game. That it is not a knock to women. It is a knock to his stupidity, because he will be offended.
The joke
and
is on
also,
him.
Also, there's something for me that, you know, Agent Orange, Cheeto Head,
yes,
all these things that are, for me specifically, that are knocking his appearance,
right?
And like, you know, you can't really help that. Like, sure, he's probably wearing too much makeup, da, da, da. Like, I don't love knocking people's appearance. It's
100%.
Just not my jam.
Yeah.
So having this name that is just like not actually offensive at all,
yes, that's
it,
the
is
joke,
just a name that he will be offended by. That's why I personally found it hilarious.
Same. And I just, and again, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you know a Donna. Like, I just think there's certain names that make me giggle because of connections that I have to it. And Donna is just one of them. Like, sorry, Donna. And so I started getting emails in about people having issue with us using that term. And I will say there are people on Twitter, queer people, people of color, who have joined in on the fun of using the term Donna. And I will say that when I look at the data, you can tell I listen to a lot of Brené Brown, because I don't know if you've noticed. I'm like, well, let's look at the data. There's something that's so official about it. And when you say data, you just mean like numbers. Like, that's it. But it sounds so data. Official. Like, when I look at the data, all of these emails come in. There's something, assumingly, that I'm going to assume demographically about these people. They're all white. And I, and this is not a, I think it's just information, right? This is information for us to have, you know, a conversation. And to me, this felt like a little bit of white feminism, I'm going to say. It felt like people stepping in. And also, like, it was like, how can you listen to all these episodes and think, like, that's what we're about? That we're a feminist podcast. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I explained it right then and there in the moment. And it felt like, in some ways, and this is me just internalizing my experience of it, for me, it felt like white people stepping in front of being woke. And this is why, like, now being woke is a movement. It was never a movement. It was just like a saying, like, stay woke. See these things happening? Stay woke. Mm-hmm. See these black injustices that are happening? Stay woke. Keep your eyes open. Don't close your eyes. Don't go to sleep, because people have been sleeping, right? And I think there's a joke. There's a comedian on SNL who kind of made this joke. I can't remember his name, because he seems like someone I don't want to, you know, really follow or keep a track of, because he's just straight cis white dude. And I'm like, okay, all right. I don't know if you can make this joke, but I hear what you're saying. But he was pretty much saying how, like, you know, white women have co-opted the woke movement. And
oh my God, is it Bill Burr?
Was he on us, bald guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if you could be saying this, but you kind of right. Oh.
You know what? I think it was Bill Burr. I can't remember if he was on SNL, but I have seen him talking about, like, white women chill out.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, do you know what I mean? I'm here for it. Call each other out.
Yes.
It's the same as, like, if you see your white friend saying nigger, call that motherfucker out.
No, we don't say
if
that.
If you see your white friend
saying
stupid,
jigaboo, call them. You don't say that, because you know we what? Say that. That's us. That's us. Hey, that is boo boo. That is,
everybody need to stop saying jigaboo. Jigaboo needs to be done.
Your face looks like mine when I was watching the episode about the jigaboos. I'm sorry, I'm not.
I still haven't seen that episode. But y'all, we came on, like, we didn't record yet, and I was like, y'all said jigaboo a lot in that episode today.
Oh my God, I just forgot that we were recording the show. But in the same place, so it's like, I, you know what, and like, it's not like black folks can't step in it. It's not like I can't be wrong. It's not like I am more, I have said things, and call me out on things. Sure, absolutely. Yes. Like, see, I'm just did about, I need to tone it down on my use of chickaboo. Done. Noted. But at the same time, it's like, check your sources and who you're coming to and coming for. This is a podcast, you know, predominantly black, queer, feminist voices. We mentioned why I literally, and I get it, like, when you have to explain a joke, it's probably not that funny. So I take that. Joke, not funny. Got it. Noted. Okay. But I just, it felt to me like a gotcha moment, like, oh, we got you. And it felt like I was being policed in my own movement.
I feel that. I feel that. I mean, and especially, I don't know, because some of these emails or messages or whatever come through me, since I'm, you know, managing social media, and I see them first and get them to James, and I'm like, wait a second, I was there. Like, me, this fem-bodied being was there, and, like, trust and believe, y'all, I know you don't know me, but I am not here for anti-feminism.
But you and Sarah would have called me directly on it, which is why I was like, I hear this, and you're like, yep, all right. Because, again, the joke was I don't even feel like I need to explain it anymore. But you know what? Here's the good news. You're never going to hear me call Donald Trump. If you've noticed, I've been calling him Donald Trump. I'll never say the phrase Donna anymore. You want to know why?
And James, excuse me, I have a question. Does that name have any power anymore?
That's exactly it. Oh my God. I love you so much. That's exactly it. That is 110% it. It has no more power. And again, you and I, we were looking for the right word to try. Like, what was that one song? Like what Akon said, I'm trying to find the right words, but trying to be disrespectful. Mm. And sexy bitch is not going to be the one for him. but I was trying to find the right words to be disrespectful, and like right. 45 gives me too much power. Like Donna was the one for me that just really sunk, and it's semantics. Things mean different things for different people. It was the one that worked for me. It meant no harm. It had harm, but you know what? We never have to hear. It's done. It's a done conversation. He has no more power. I like to use the name now as a reminder of it's like McCarthyism, it's like George Wallace, and the name serves as a reminder, oh, that's Trump. Oh, I'm happy to talk about him, because also he's a loser. He is a loser. Like the Confederacy, you see people waving that flag? They're telling you they're a loser. They're waving this flag of like, ooh, we lose things, right?
We lost.
We're racist losers, and the same thing with Trump. So I will gladly say his name. I dance on it, I spit on it. I pee on it. I Rona. I put it. It's my COVID test. I put it in my nose, and boom.
And gross. Gross. Oh, yeah,
probably means I have COVID.
Wait. Okay. So I don't even know if you're supposed to talk about this today, but I would just want to tag on this. Speaking of Rona tests, have you heard about this like Rona vaccine that's happening around?
She's coming to town. I say it's like 90% effective.
Yes.
Absolutely. Pfizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, my dyslexic behind. It was like,
only reason is because I heard it said on other podcasts. And so when I saw the word, I was like, that means Pfizer.
I'm just shook. I mean, of course, there's like so many more tests. There's so much to do. There's so much going on. But it is amazing and also a little ridiculous to me that it is coming up right now. In like, amazing that it's coming up right now, but also
thank goddess.
Guess who is going to be like, this is what happened during, like, I did this. It was like, no, sir, you did not.
Or Trump will try to be like, oh, this is part of the hoax and blah, blah. No, you know what this is? This is the goddess at work.
You think he's going to try to
believe? You better believe. All right? Because this is the goddess at work being like, listen, Trump was so hard to defeat that it took like a pandemic to be. She was like, y'all going down the wrong path. Let me give you a pandemic, racial injustice, murder hornets. And people are still like, I still think I'm going to vote for him. Like she did everything she could. And then she was like, no, I will hold back the power of the vaccine. And then it was like 3 days later, it's like, oh, the vaccine's coming. Like, whoo, she had to hold that off for us. So thank you. Y'all better put your crystals out in the sun and thank goddess or whatever. Do your dance.
Love it. Praise up, vibes out. I'm very into that. I love that. Into it. Yes, ma'am. Okay. So the other day I went out with a friend of mine and we went to Zeitgeist and had a lovely time. They're like dividers and it's real cute and it's a whole moment.
Outdoor space.
Like long picnic tables, two people at each table. And those two people are the two people who are there together. It's great. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. It was very safe. Blah, blah, blah. But we were chit-chatting and she, you know, the idea of ethnicity came up and like what her ethnic background is. And her mom is British English. And her dad is Mexican-American, or Mexican native and Spanish. And his last name is Tacey. Tacey's an English, like British name. Her brother is her half-brother. And it's her half-brother from her mom. So her brother is all white. And then married an all-white woman who's very like hippy-dippy and like into like all the magic of the earth and all the things, which is great, into it. However, they decided to name their son, who is a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, now frat age, they named him Asad Talib tasty. I'm just having a hard time with that because it feels a whole lot like appropriation to me. Do you know what I mean? Like Natasha, okay, that's Russian. You know what I mean? Okay. You know, different. Ooh. And he also, apparently he's also gotten into, I mean, I said his last name. Should I have said his last name? Oh, well, maybe he'll listen. And has gotten into like a bunch of like little troubles. Like, you know, troubles that, you know, if he were my son, he would have gone to jail for. But with since he's not. Name.
You know what? I would like to see him. This is actually good A-B testing. Because now I can't wait to see what happens when he has to apply for jobs.
Yo, and see what happens.
He's probably not like, unless they're doing like, unless it's a company that's on the up and up, because not all like companies are, some of them are turning the beat around, give it to you, but it will be like, interesting. And one of two things might happen. They might show up and think that like he is totally Rachel Dolezaling them, you know? Like they might think like, oh, okay, we're trying to do a diversity hire to, you know, create some equity in our company. And this white man trying to steal, like, or maybe, like, he, like, tried to steal, you know, it's interesting. Because I have, my neighbor upstairs has, like, I would, like, he's, like, you know, appropriating, like, you know, not appropriating, but he's on a journey that has, like, led him to, like, he's this, like, Buddhist guy, like, super, super Buddhist, but will, like, yell the shit at you if you're, like, you know, making a lot of noise at 9 p.m., where's all that Zen meditation, motherfucker? Where's your Zen now? Where's your Zen now? So I see him looking at me with his white eyes, looking at my black skin. I see it. I see it. I see your white gaze. I see it. And then to kind of find out, so he's like, oh, my name is Shindu. Well, how come this package says David Wallace? When this package accidentally got delivered. So that's a little bit different because he renamed himself. I don't want to spoil it, but I was going to do a Lovecraft Country spoiler. Like when a certain black woman renamed herself on episode 7. Who you think you is, David Wallace? You ain't Hippolyta.
It's just such a trip to me. I don't understand, like, yes, I understand, like, oh, different cultures are beautiful, and this language is beautiful, and this name and this language is beautiful. Okay, cool. But, like, do you not realize the struggles that we have to go through, like, that we, meaning melanated peoples, have to go through with, quote, eccentric names, with unique names? Do you know what I mean? I'm Samantha. Like, I recognize that's a privilege, right? Yeah. But, like,
you're not Shalita, that ain't you.
You know what I mean?
Taekwondo Salisa, that's not you. And listen. I love her. And you know what? If you ain't black, don't you laugh at that joke. That joke that I just said was for black people. So I'm just saying, take your laugh and bring it back. That means now people are going to be like, I don't know if I can laugh at anything. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you sit in that uncertainty.
I cannot stand you. Also, you know, there's some girl listening to this and just heard her name and she was like, oh my gosh, my name. And I was like, yes, ma'am. Yeah, so okay, let's just backtrack. She's not the person who named her son. This is not my friend. It's my friend's step brother or half brother's wife named her son this. So I just heard the story.
Okay.
So all right. Let's not act like I'm, you know, canoodling with the enemy. I'm just kidding.
From
the story goes that she just thought that the name was beautiful and, oh, I'm the worst because I didn't write this down, but it was something along the line. It was the meanings of the names. Like Assad means lion and then Talib meaning is student.
Lion student.
So he's learning to be a lion or a lion and also, you know, a forever student, always learning, always growing, right? So I get the, like, why you want...
He already has, like, white male privilege. Does he need a name that steps into it? I say name him Mud. I say...
Stop it.
I want a decree in my reparations package that not only do we get white butlers, but we also, white men have been named, like, trash can or a twig.
No.
We need that's equity. Bringing it down, you know, bringing it down a peg. Scapegoat.
I mean, listen, I'm pretty sure. Wait, what is A17 airplane? What's it?
G7? G's.
You know what I'm talking about?
What? A1 sauce?
Oh, Lord, y'all.
Is it a rapper? Because I definitely. Is it a pop cultural music person? Or then MTV?
No. Elon Musk's son.
Oh, that's where you were going? Oh, Elon Musk? A17 sauce?
No,
oh.
He named his son something crazy. You don't know about this? With the AE, that's like one sound. XA, like 9 or something. I don't know.
I'm here for this. I like this because I'm here for like white people having names that are hard to pronounce. So that's fine. You don't have to go trash can. You can name it like Fnashnipot Dut. And like with like some.
Can you see this? It's the letters.
It looks like I had a seizure. XIA12. Yeah, I'm for that. So white people like name yourself like a bunch of like random numbers and letters. See, that's equity. Isn't that equity? I don't think I understand equity. It's equity for me.
Oh, it's pronounced Ash.
Get
Ash.
Out of here. I'm done.
X Ash A12.
But that's great because like the substitute teacher is going to struggle. It's going to struggle and it's going to look for the person of color student. And then this white boy is going to raise his hand and it's going to be like, that's what we're talking about. Even the playing field. So dear white.
Aaron.
Yeah, yes.
Balake.
Dear white people, just name like. Fuck up the spelling on your kids' names a little bit. Just do a little bit of something, right? That's how you want to, you know, we want to even the playing field a little bit. Screw up your kid's name.
I mean, that's already like, you know, not like, I don't want to say screwed up, but like the Kayleys with the GH. You know what I'm saying? It's happening.
Oh, yeah. It's more of that. Add in an X and, you know, an extra like, you know, B. And, you know, J's are pretty, and that really confuses you. A J and a G together, a J-G-Y combo. Ooh, that substitute teacher's going to be stack.
Love it. Love that for us.
I can remember as a child thinking it was odd that here was this can full of meat.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This week on my show Bullseye, David Letterman on shame, regret, and canned hams.
Is this the best delivery version of pork?
That's this week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Congratulations, you've won a ticket to attend an exclusive opportunity in a relaxing environment with two lovers.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a sort of proposition of sorts, but really it's an ad for our podcast. Wonderful. It's a show we do here on Maximum Fun where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into.
I'm Rachel McElroy, and you just heard Griffin McElroy, and we are excited for you to join us as we talk about movies and music and books.
Things like sneezing or the idea of rain.
Can you get news or information you can use?
Absolutely,
so.
You cannot, because we're here to talk to you about pumpernickel bread.
You can find new episodes on Wednesdays.
So catch the wave!
I might open my second can of wine.
You're more than welcome. I'm driving now. I'm driving. You should totally. You're driving. Yeah, yeah. Open that
Don't
wine.
Judge me.
Open it now.
Should the listeners hear it?
Yes.
So I don't know if anyone is into your ASMR.
I was going to say, is this ASMR?
It is. James, you're interrupting my ASMR.
Sorry.
Thank you. So for anyone who's into ASMR, this is my second can of
That was a really good ASMR video.
Was it? Thank you.
That was really good. You know who also does a really good ASMR? Janet Jackson.
Oh,
Google Janet Jackson ASMR. She's got the perfect voice for it because she's like.
Wait, she does it for real?
She does. She's like, hi, I'm Janet Jackson, and my favorite color is blue.
Ew.
And,
wait, do you guys, wait, hold on.
When I was a kid, I used to fly a kite. Beep, 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 beep.
I love it. This is my first sip.
I hate everything. I know this is a yes and everything. I've never had to listen to someone's live recording of ASMR. It's one thing if I just like click onto it, but to have to hear someone's, like, I feel like I'm the producer. I'm like, can we get you, let's take that slurp again. Let's just take, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in.
I'm sorry. I just listened to you do Janet Jackson.
Hey, that's different. I'm doing impressions.
I can't stand you. Do you guys think I should have an ASMR channel? Should it just pop up randomly?
Tweet at us.
Tweet at us. Hit us up on IG. Let us know. Should I start a channel?
We're not free until we're all free. That's the sound of me crinkling money. Boo capitalism. Like, speaking of money, wait, I was going to segue. I'm segueing. We're in it. Speaking of money and money, black
money,
people.
Money.
So we're going to talk. So elections are feedback. That's how I always look at them. Because I am Olivia Pope. Let's go. What's the next thing to do? I've just been so inspired by Stacey Abrams. She took the election as feedback in 2018 and was like, the system is racist. I need to register more people to vote. Right. So elections are feedback. And the economy was the number one issue for a majority of Americans. And now I'm like, but what? Because like for some of us who are, you know, social justice warriors and, you know, our marginalization is our lived experience, right? Like my experience, I never get to stop being a black gay man in America. That is, and so it impacts the way that I move, the way that I vote, my concerns. So for me, my number one issue is racism. But, you know, I like winning elections. I like winning elections, yes, because winning is fun, but because of a necessity for myself, my communities, the future generations coming up. And I want to continue winning elections. And I think that it's important for us as Democrats to kind of take a step back and as progressives, and let's get more strategic about, and some of it's just rebranding. Some of it is just rebranding our issues so we can get to winning and chiseling away at things like that. Like economics, and that's the thing, is that sometimes you're like, oh, racism. Sometimes people are like, they get tired. It gets said so much, and it's hard to prove.
You're sensitive. You're overreacting.
Right.
It's a bad game. Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, and the great thing is that we can pivot, and we will be doing this over the next few like episodes of I'm going to challenge myself to any issue that I bring and a call to action to bring it to how it can be a touch point when we're talking about political issues and things we want to get movement on and to win, how it will affect things economically. Well, economics is so intrinsic into everything that we do. You can pivot everything to economics. Like Republicans started coming around to prison reform because we told them how much it was costing them. And they were like, oh, well, okay. Not because it was the socially right thing to do, but because we brought it from an economic standpoint. Climate change, the winning conversation about getting like a greener, you know, infrastructure is talking about how many jobs it's going to create and good paying jobs. Like, it sucks, but that is this system that we are in. So let's use this fucked up train that we're on and get it doing on the track that we wanted to go on.
100%. Yeah.
So it's a rebranding. It's even things like, you know what? Socialism, for me, it's not the hill that I want to die on. It's semantics. Socialism, it's a losing phrase in some communities, okay? Some cultures have escaped some really terrifying socialist dictators. So when they arrive to our shores and they hear people being like, let's do some socialism, they're like, I'm going to go vote for Republicans who have gotten really good at crafting the what we're trying to do as evil socialism. Take a page out of Elizabeth Warren's book. Everything she says is really on par with socialism. But then you say, but Elizabeth Warren, do you believe in capitalism? She's like, I'm a capitalist. And they're like, oh, okay. She hasn't changed anything that she says. She doesn't.
That's the game. Titles. It's all about titles, isn't it?
And so if you want to win elections, like we can, I don't want to, we can try to play like the, oh, but these words, and words do matter, but let's win some elections so we can keep ourselves safe and have some power. Republicans have been doing this game for so long. So we're going to get strategic as we pivot. So this is a new era, because they're going to come back, and they're going to come back with a vengeance, and they're very good at crafting their messages. They have been very good at a long time. Like, you know, Ronald Reagan got really good at crafting racism through economics. It was through all of Reaganomics is crafted through, or all of like their racist ideas that Republicans are crafting. They're like, oh, I'm not racist. I just, you know, I don't, you know, taxes. And I, you know, I don't think that we should be funding all schools. I mean, what about my neighborhoods? But all of these things just keep the money into a certain sect. And so my number one issue is racism and inequality. So let's talk about it in terms of the economy. Let's talk about it in the term of winning. Okay, I'm gonna get super smart on y'all. I hope, welcome to my racism and economy class.
Are you finna talk about some data?
We gonna get to the data. Uncle's here too. We won't get in the numbers. So let's define economics. I mean, economics is the study of how a society chooses to allocate its finite resources amongst the infinite demands of its members. Told you we were going to get nerded today. And our economy is systemically racist through government sanctioned occupational segregation, exploitation, neglect, and we'll add in some racial inequality in the United States through slavery, Jim Crow, the New Deal, which left many Black folks out of the conversation and advancements. And if we're going to be honest about this, if we're going to really try to turn the page, eliminating these current disparities amongst Americans, it's going to require intentional public policy efforts to dismantle systemic inequality. And the thing is when you approach things from an economic standpoint, it gives you a specific thing to say, this is what we want specifically here. And again, people are very selfish when they vote, and when you show that it's going to impact them and get their benefit from an economic standpoint, you have more leverage for a potential winning argument, because you're not only going to win the creating racism, creating some equality, but also like some, you know, financial equality amongst the races, amongst Black people specifically, have been left so behind. So like I said, the challenge is that people are selfish, but remember, it's we, the people, and that these things do affect it. Just because you think that something is not affecting you, it is. Racism doesn't only just affect us like from a, you know, day-to-day standpoint, but it's also an economic standpoint. Anti-Blackness, and like when we say white people in this conversation, anti-Blackness is not just for white people. Everybody, it is a disease that affects everybody. So don't think you can just tune out because you're like, but I'm not white. Well, not saying like, oh, we're going to test and see if you're white.
Listen, but also let's be real. Anti-Blackness like is a huge issue in the Black community. Like a massive issue in the Black community even so. So y'all tune in, listen, because it's probably you.
And when you can show people through the numbers that we're going to go through, and you show them how anti-Blackness, if you are Black or you're Latinx or, you know, Asian American, that like these systems, again, that's why you fight for the person at the bottom of the totem pole, because it trickles, oppression trickles up. Mm-hmm. How close are you to the fire, right? And you're getting the heat. It's trickling up. You're getting some of you all, you're still getting burned. Some of the embers are still coming to get you, right? And so if we can have these conversations, like, again, like, according to the data that we have so far on the exit polling from the election, that's the name of this episode, according to the data. According to what we know so far is that, like, you know, Trump has the highest numbers amongst POCs since Nixon. Mm. And so we need to start having these conversations. Like, this is the work that we need to do. I'm glad this election wasn't a blowout, because we would have been like in 2008, oh, we're done. Back to brunch. Mm-hmm. No, brunch is still canceled for many reasons. but we still have work to do. Yeah. So yes, the cost of racism, and you know, y'all are like, but how much does racism really cost? I'm glad you asked. I got numbers for you.
Speak on it.
Apparently, racism costs, this is according to Citigroup, they did a study. Apparently, it costs $16 trillion. We got receipts.
Wait.
We got receipts. So let's look at this. Black workers have lost about $113 billion in potential wages over the past two decades because they couldn't get a college degree. The housing market lost $218 billion in sales because black applicants couldn't get home loans.
Wow.
And about $13 trillion, we just go, this is the rest of it. This is just the rest of it. Those are just the billions. Right. Those are just the billions. And about $13 trillion in business revenue never flowed into the economy because black entrepreneurs couldn't access bank loans.
Wow.
Because you're not allowing people to participate in the economic systems and flourish in it and have money spend through it. Everybody loses. By not allowing certain groups of people to participate, everybody loses $16 trillion. And that's just in like the last two decades.
This is, I'm sorry, this is just like, I know this is a tangent and forgive
me.
I was just talking to my mother who was a banker for like 20 some odd years about an experience that I had at her old bank. We won't name specific banks because I don't know, lawsuits and shit. Anyway, but I've been banking with this bank since I was 15 years old. Went in to get a cashier's check to pay my rent because that's how I always pay, just because I like to like have it out of my account, whatever. I went in Cupertino because I was working for a company down there for a moment, and they asked me for three different forms of ID. I had my bank card with my PIN that had my name on it. I had my driver's license with my name on it. I didn't have another form of ID, and they wouldn't let me take my own money out of my account that I had, again, two forms of identification for, had the PIN number. Like, I wasn't, what? And it was simply because I am who I am.
Oh, 100%. I literally, as you were talking about this, and they're like, ma'am, we need to see this kind of ID. You're like, I got this. Like, and now we need to see this. And now we need to see this. And then I literally imagine there's just like some like white girl named Becky. And she's just like, hey, can I get some money? And like, here you go.
Like, dead ass. Somebody else was like, just withdrawing cash, and the cashier, or then the cashier, the teller was an Indian woman.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was like, y'all. And then I went and asked my mom, like, mom, is this a thing that, you know, they do? She's like, no, that shouldn't have happened to you. Especially since you've been such a loyal customer. You've never had any problems, yada, yada, yada. Like, what the what?
Well, we know why, and that's racism. So we can and look, it had a cost. Like, that was one less person, and racism has a cost because that's one less person to participate. You could bank somewhere else. It, and then if that jeopardizes your ability to also give that money back into the economy, like, racism has.
If I couldn't pay my rent that month,
and how much it could have, you know, spiraled, and that's just one instance of, you know, racist banking practices are just on an even micro level, but it is, it's micro, but it's not, because that resonated and had an effect on you. And like, how much is that part of the black experience? So, so some other economic impacts of racism to keep in mind, like, how do we get here? Always follow the money, follow it. Okay.
Follow.
Fun fact, by estimates, slaveholders extracted more than $14 trillion worth of labor by today's dollars from their captives. So they got about $14 trillion worth of labor. Again,
well, let's go ahead and spread that out for reparations. Well, thank
exactly.
you very much.
Exactly.
Appreciate
and so,
you.
Again, all that free labor, able to build all this wealth, it trickles to other, you know, white communities, and there you go. So there was also, so we talk about like black jobs and black wages. And so, or even, you know, occupational segregation is a thing till this day. So post Civil War, black folks were incentivized at first to stay doing domestic and agricultural jobs for very low wages. And that carried on all the way through Jim Crow, which eventually through the South, black people were like a kind of eventually kind of driven away from some of these areas. And so those jobs started to, again, when I say driven away, through like, you know, white people murdering black people and driving them away. That's what I don't mean. Like, they were just like, time to go, like fleeing for their lives and safety. And so then you started having a high concentration of Asian American and Latinx folks in these occupations as well. And people of color remain to this day overrepresented in the lowest paid agriculture, domestic, and service vocations, while black or African American folks, Asian, Hispanic, or Latino people comprise 36% of the overall U.S. workforce. They constitute about 58% of miscellaneous agricultural workers, 70% of maids and housekeeping cleaners, and 74% of baggage porters, bellhops, and concierge. And again, these are jobs that, like, again, after slavery, these were the only kind of jobs that Black people could have. And so, and then it was already sort of devalued in how much money they were going to make. And you see the, you know, remnants of the wage stagnation continuing to this day, even though that work is so incredibly important to the wheels of this society turning, that does not necessarily come up in a financial retribution.
Did you know that? Okay, so tipping is very offensive in certain cultures.
Oh my God.
Are you about to get into that? I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Look at you. I'm so sad because I was going to blow your mic. I just discovered this.
Penny.
And all right, put a pin in it. We're going to get to tipping.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Because yes, we're going to get to it. But little did you know, tipping has its roots in racism. Like anything. So,
but also give me my tip.
I mean, because the system is fucked up. So make sure tip extra because of the systems you'll see. So slavery and Jim Crow, they devalued these types of work, and the legacy that still continues today increase these wages of these jobs and communicate. And so this is what we need to do. So again, us as the Democratic Party and the progressives have to communicate these stories, the legacies to it, right? When you have these POC voters who are voting, honestly, against their own best interests because the Republican Party is using you. So we need to communicate these stories. When we communicate how much less they're actually making compared to a straight white person, right? Or not even a straight white person, just a white person, a white man. So we have to get better at communicating the story. And I know it's like, I know it's frustrating and not everybody has the energy to be able to do this right now. I totally get it. But for me, I'm already in the mind frame of like, great, how do I pivot this? Because I don't want to, it's close, 74 million for progress and 70 million for like going in, back into the dark ages. Woo! Too close for me. What are the conversations that we need to have? The pocketbook is one of the quickest ways to win people over. So there's a few touch points that I want to talk about also about how we got here. We talk about the Great Depression. You had the New Deal's Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, the FLSA. And through that, a lot of people are like, oh, the New Deal, FDR, da 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 da. Everything was great for some people. White people. So and through the New Deal, you know, we got the 40-hour work week, minimum wage, overtime benefits, etc., child labor laws, except for in many domestic, agricultural, and service occupations were exempt from the New Deal. And it was specific. It was like, well, but white people aren't doing these jobs. Like there was a fight against it to not give it to everybody. And in some recent years, in some areas, it has started to include some of these occupations and areas. But agriculture and domestic workers, many to this day right now are Latinx or Asian America, remain some of the least protected employees in the United States. Did you know children as young as 12 years old are legally allowed to work in the fields? Live-in domestic service workers, babysitters, and companions of the elderly, all occupants in which people of color are disproportionately represented also remain excluded from many FLSA protections. So these protections from the New Deal.
It's just, and we were just talking a few episodes before, we were talking about prison labor and what that is. And that's just slavery reincarnated. Like, stop reincarnating slavery. I'm done.
Stop making for slavery try to happen. Like, it's
like, y'all, we're over it. It's finished. Can we just
pay people? There's enough money and resources for everybody to have a place to live and food and a job. There is enough. We do have enough.
Like, we have enough, and frankly, Bezos doesn't need all of that. You know what I'm saying?
It came to my mind, but he ain't the only one, and so
he not. But like,
okay. So you know. And so, yes, and so that's, again, when we're getting specific about, you know, the laws that we're wanting people to pass, we can't, you know, we're just like, let's end racism. Okay, that's great. That's why, like, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King, that the March on Freedom was for, I forget the name of the title. So, yeah, they cut that out. But, like, part of it was, like, I forget, poverty was in it or something, too. And they let you, they conveniently always leave that out of the title. I don't know, Google it. They got me. I don't remember. But it was, that's why he was such a threat, because he was also talking about economics. And they'll let you have, like, when we say no more racism, but like they won't give us that economic equity because then we're really on par with them. And so we need to get specific in the laws that we're wanting to get passed to have the economic parity that we deserve.
I found a quote really quick that is, as long as there is poverty in this world, no man can be totally rich, even if he has $1 billion, which is Dr. King, the American Dream speech, 1961.
No, it's true. Oh my God. We're going to put a pause in this because I want to know the title. The March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Jobs came before the freedom. He was talking about, yes, like, and so, but they always say just, oh, the March for Freedom. It was the March for Jobs and Freedom because it wasn't enough for us just to be free. Free to do what? Like, it's a capitalist society. If you don't have any money, you have no power. You have no voice. You have no nothing, right? And then you even look at, like, the benefits of the post-World War II GI Bill, which fueled the growth for the American middle class. It was denied for a lot of Black people to participate in that. And the insistence of white members of Congress from the South desperate to enforce racial segregation, even though these folks are heroes coming home, having fought for their country. Tipping. Remember that? We put a pin in it. Strike that pin.
Let's put a pin go. In it. Take the pin out. Can I take the pin out?
Well, let me. Okay. Well, so it's rooted in racism.
Is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Kills the freeze.
Yes. And like you were saying that, like, so it was a thing that it came over from Europe and then it came over to here and it allowed American restaurants and railroad companies to maximize profits by refusing to pay Black employees. They're like, oh, you're just going to get a tip and that'll be fine. And so then it makes these Black employees have to fucking work hard. Oh, I got to get this tip. My life literally fucking depends on it because they weren't getting paid. And many of the service vocations that previously enslaved people were forced to carry out, such as, so it's like, that's when you have tipping was just going to be in the food serving industry, cutting hair, carrying baggage, driving vehicles. They all became subject to tipping. And restaurant servers, bellhops, food delivery drivers, valets, parking attendants, nail salon workers are some of the many occupations paid primarily through tips, which still predominantly done by BIPOC folks.
Lots of white folks. Friends, if you happen to be in the industry, and by the industry, I don't mean the acting industry, which I am in currently, but the serving industry, the bartending industry that I have been in and will maybe be in again. I'm not going to say probably because, like, you know, prayers up, vibes out that I'll never do it again. Pero, many, many years and, like, respect it. But y'all, yes. You are getting fucked over by the system as well.
Yes.
Like, it is not just brown folks. Y'all are getting fucked over by the system. People in Ohio shouldn't be making $5 an hour.
Yeah,
I don't
actually it's not know a livable wage.
But it's something crazy.
It's not a livable wage. Yeah.
Just because you're getting tips. It's not a livable wage. Yeah. Yeah. And not everybody tips. And we know that.
Mm-hmm.
Servers, industry folk, we know that. Yep. It is foolish.
100%.
Show up and show out. Because it is.
And like, again, right at our tipping, it's rooted in racism. So that should make us all be housewife style throwing tables and being saying, hail to the nah, We don't want anything that is rooted in racism. We want to uproot those roots and be like, I'm out. So just know that every time, think about this, like every time you give a tip or receive a tip, you are connected. You right now are connected to the roots of slavery and racist practices. So when we look at the income and wealth gap, back to the numbers,
back to the data.
I was telling you some stories. So there was one study that I'm sure many people have seen a lot of, you know, the studies about the income wealth gap, but there was one study that I looked at that was about upward mobility. So the children, and it looked at children's income versus their parents. And so when we look at like Hispanic and Latino Americans, their rates of upward income mobility across generations are slightly below those of whites. Hispanics are therefore on a path to moving up sustainability in the income distribution across generations, potentially closing much of the present gap between their incomes and those of white Americans. And so I start seeing the parallels as to what's happening down in Florida. We've seen this before when people like white supremacy and whiteness is so tantalizing for anybody. Like if they can get a piece of that white pie, oh, fuck everybody else. Fuck everybody else. Ask the Irish. Ask the Irish. Ask the Germans. Ask them. Ask the Italians. Like, everybody who before it was like, oh, they're like, they weren't considered white, right? But they, when they got the little piece of the white pie, it was like, fuck everybody else. And it's, we're starting to see that happen down in Florida. And so we just need to make sure we're having, and that's Florida. Remember, Latinx people are not a monolith, because the Latinx folks in Arizona and Nevada, like, turned it out overwhelmingly for Joe Biden, right?
No, so there's group of different humans is a monolith.
Right, period. Right. Yes. So it's different conversations that we need to be having. And I think you can still reflect and show them, yes, Cuban Americans, you still are going to be making less than this white person because of racism. Okay. Right. And then just going to show them, through you being racist, we're missing out on trillions of dollars. Okay. Right. It really goes back to the original point that I made in the beginning. $16 trillion are going to be left on the table if we don't fix this racism shit. Asian Americans have a much higher levels of upward mobility than all other groups, but Asian children whose parents were born in the U.S. have levels of intergenerational mobility similar to white children. And this makes it more difficult to predict the trajectory of Asian American incomes, but Asian folks appear likely to remain at income levels comparable to or above white Americans in the long run. So you also start to see, like, who's also willing to make noise about things. I'm good.
Fun fact, Asian American women make 87 cents to the dollar, whereas white American women make 79 cents to the dollar, which is very interesting to me. I haven't done a whole lot of research in that, but because of a corner that you either have already heard or might heard.
Wait, let's just go ahead. It's worth revisiting. Can you break down, since we're talking about the wealth, break down those points. Can you break those down for us?
Yes, I would love that. Okay, so this is from a fact sheet that I found that is called Quantifying America's Gender Wage Gap by Race Ethnicity. It's by the nationalpartnership.org. White men make a dollar to their dollar. White women make 79 cents. Black women make 63 cents. Mm-hmm. Indigenous women make 60 cents. Latinx women make 55 cents. Mm-hmm. But Asian American women make 87 cents, which is very interesting. And I think that there is something that's very interesting about, I always feel very strangely talking about this because it is not,
it's my not your culture.
Culture.
We're only making observations culture. From, again, but we're also at the bottom.
From an outside perspective.
We're also on the bottom of the totem pole. So we can kind of see all the things that are also happening, right?
And also, like, speaking to, like, you know, I love that I'm saying this, but it's like, I have so many Chinese friends and so many Asian American friends. And, like, of course, I was like, I have black friends. Right. Like, bitch, don't talk
about
me.
Listen, I grew up, my and best also, friends in junior high and it were Filipino. Like, grew up with the Filipinos, you know, but.
There is this unfortunate in some ways, unfortunate in other ways, ideal that Asian American people are the white folks of the POC,
yes.
Right? There's an assimilation
yes.
that has happened that, and there hasn't been the black girl magic, black boy joy movement for Asian American people, which is unfortunate because there's not as strong of a connection to, like, fuck yes, this is my culture and don't tell me I'm part of you. Mm. You know, or don't tell me that I've melted into right. you, America. I want to be part of my own. Also in America, it's a salad, not a melting
right.
pot. You know what I'm saying?
No, totally.
And also.
Well, and you also just see the history.
Sometimes assimilation gets you good things.
And it does. Like, I remember reading in a history book about, it wasn't saying this was bad. It was breaking down all the different races. And it's like, the Asian Americans are the model minority. Like, no joke, in a history
right.
book, broke it down as fact. And I'm reading this in my history book. And then, you know, through this podcast, we've talked about so much of, like, the horrific things in this country that has been done, you know, between the Chinese Exclusion Act that was incredibly racist that happened in 1882. We look about the Japanese American internment camps. So there is different cultures have chosen to go about healing from the injustices this country has done in just a different way. But I you will say that when you start looking at the economic gaps, like, I guess if you're like, the unrest isn't there as much. And also too, I think it was Killer Mike did a thing. Was it Killer Mike? Somebody, I think Killer Mike did, like, how long he tried to see how long he can keep a dollar in the black community.
Oh, I think that was him.
Yeah. He tried to do how long he could do keep a dollar in the black community. And like for other communities, like Asian Americans can keep it in for like, you know, 28 days, a dollar in their community. Every other culture is a little bit less than that. And for the black community, we can only keep it in our community for about like 6 hours, right? Like it's so much harder for us because our communities have been burnt down. System, like, you know, all the different communities that, you know, there's more than just Tulsa, the Rosewoods, there's so many. Anyways, oh, speaking of us, in contrast, Black and Native American children have substantially lower rates of upward mobility than other racial groups. For example, Black children born to parents in the bottom household income quantities have about a 2% chance of rising to the top quantile of household incomes compared with 10.6% for whites. And then Native American and Black children have much higher rates of downward mobility than other groups and tend to get stuck in place in terms of upward mobility. So everyone else's numbers are like, oh, they're growing, they're going up. And then ours, it might go down. It might stay stagnant. There's not as much growth that we're seeing from our communities.
It's heartbreaking that, you know, the people whose land this actually is and the people who built this country are the ones who can't get ahead. It is so heartbreaking.
Well, and I think that it's probably like some systemic fear built within other, and it's sad because you see these other communities who have a pace for upper mobility. And again, just sort of like, it's like, you know, when we talk about, you know, white feminism, just like leaving others behind so you can get your piece of that pie. And like, you have to look out for the other who has the most to lose, because that's what I'm doing. I'm voting for you all. I'm trying to stand shoulder to shoulder, you know, with you all. But you see, like, maybe it's, I feel like, are they afraid that if Black people got true equity, that we would then like try to enslave them or something like that? Like,
yes,
but it's like,
that is exactly it, because it's the golden rule shit. It's treat people the way you want to be. Well, if I treated them like that, they're going to treat me like
this. They're like, oh, better keep them down. You know, those who are of a privileged class, I would take it upon. That's what Batman should be doing. I know what Batman should be, you know, righting the wrongs of, you're like, don't get me started on that, Kate, billionaire, the Jeff Bezos. Oh, okay. More data. So the Federal Reserve.
Oh, wait, never mind.
What? Are we going to tangent?
I mean, we might, I don't know. Is Barron Trump, would he be Batman?
No, he's the Joker. He's gonna go. Yeah, I don't think so.
Was the Joker rich?
The Joker, I don't know, but maybe in this.
We don't know anything about Batman's parents. He'll be
Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor was rich and evil. And that's what I think. I don't. Prove me wrong, Barron. I know you're listening, Barron. Prove me wrong. But you got.
Prove me wrong. You're a child. You have. There's hope for you.
I'm praying for you, but right now you got the evil genes. But you know what? Your aunt or niece or cousin, Mary Trump, whatever the fuck she is in your family tree.
You know what I'm saying?
So there's hope. There's hope.
There's hope.
Little gay Barron, do it.
And yeah, every song, there's hope. Listen to it. It's amazing.
We're gonna send you a care package. That's one of my missions, to make sure that Barron Trump don't turn evil. So
I'm about that. I'm super about that. Let's make that happen.
Sending him some care packages. So
prayers up, vibes out.
Yes. Federal Reserve data show that that white households' net worth grew 43% to $61,200 between 1995 and 2016. It remained flat at $35,000 for Black families. I know.
So many years.
I know, and not a lot of growth. And Moody's Investor Service found that 44% of Black households owned their homes in 2019, compared with 74% of white households. You had talked about banking earlier. I highly recommend this movie, The Banker, on Apple TV. It's got Samuel L. Jackson.
Hey.
It's got Sam L. Jackson. Anyways, check it out. It talks about inequalities in housing, being able to like buy a house, and inequalities in banking. There's just like a rich history of that. Redlining, which were, you know, Federal Housing Administration policies that refused to insure mortgages to Black neighborhoods, shut Black Americans out of the most common avenues for accumulating wealth and home ownership. They had, you know, predatory lending practices. And then we were talking about this, but Lance, that was once ours, taken away through acts of whiteness in 2001 results from an 18-month investigation of black land loss in America was published by the Associated Press. It turns out up to 107 of those land takings, 57, so 107 like land takings of like black people are on land, they're free, they're citizens, I'm gonna take your land. 57 of which were violent. See, you tried to come to my house and I was like, not today, sucker. 57 of those were violent. The other cases involve trickery and trickery. Legal manipulations. That's this article listed as trickery. So, you know, be careful trickery. With them. You know, them white folks, they be tricksters. Okay, and back to economics. So focus on the GDP because it directly impacts personal finance, investments, and job growth. When GDP grows at a healthy and consistent rate, new job opportunities are created and wages tend to rise with productivity. And unemployed workers tend to be brought back into the job market, which helps to reduce crime rates, addiction, mental health issues related to unemployment. Healthy GDP growth also signals to international investors that the United States is the place to invest and produce goods and services. And then foreign investments means high-paying jobs staying in the U.S. and good jobs not being shipped away to other countries with higher GDP growth. And I get that's why like Trump was trying to focus on that so much, but GDP is one part of it, so focusing on that and making sure everyone's got jobs, we also have to do the other part of the healing and having the conversations about the stories, the history of the systemic issues, listening to black people's experiences and voices. So it's twofold. It can't be one. Mm-hmm. Trump just tried to do one, but your system is already so broken, so the only people who are going to benefit from it are white people. And like you had like, you know, low unemployment levels and, you know, good GDP during Charlottesville, but that didn't stop white people from acting a fool. So it's gotta be, it's gotta be both. Here's the thing. If we turn this beat around.
So I'd have dropped it.
If we turn this racist economic beat around, drop the phone. Stop it.
I'm trying to take notes. You know what? I'm out here taking notes on what you're saying. Get out.
Okay.
You know what? You trying to judge me?
Over here doing my job. I'm like, how many drinks have you had? If we turn this meat around, we could have $5 trillion in gross domestic product over the next 5 years. If those gaps, and all the things I was just talking about, if those gaps were closed today, this is what that's the study indicated.
Insane.
And I mean, $5 trillion in the next 5 years. That's a lot. Not a lot. And all we have to do is stop being racist. And also, if we just start like closing the gap of all these like, you know, racial economic disparities, you know, with like the housing market and allowing black people to participate in like having jobs and entrepreneurship and going to college and all these different things that could be when you invest in this. And that's what we should, reparations is really an investment into black people that is a long time coming, and the entire society is going to benefit from it.
Stopping being racist does not mean stopping seeing color. It does not mean erasing it. It does not mean, well, we're all just human beings. That's not what it is. Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. We are just human beings. Mm-hmm. But because systemic racism and this system has been in place for so long, there's a lot of work to do to make sure that race isn't a problem. So we can't just turn it off. It's not a light switch, you know?
Right. There's still, and that's what we've been talking about, like there's still the reckoning that needs to get done. And that's like when we're talking about the unification between, you know, the two fractured parties, there still has to be a reckoning that is happening where people have to, we have to have a come to Jesus about the racism and the pain and the suffering, you know, like people, like you can't just like, you know, if I like, you've heard all the examples, you know, if I light Sam's dog on fire, I can't just be like, oh, I expect you to forgive me, right? There's gonna be a lot of conversations. Right. There's gonna be a lot of, it's a weird example.
But here's my deal. If you let my dog on fire, let's say it's an accident. Let's say that. Even so, let's say, you know, you thought,
okay,
I'm gonna try to give you some benefits because I feel like this is where people are at.
Thought it was a demon.
You're trying to light something close to my dog, and you knew you probably shouldn't have lit it so close to my dog, but you know, still you did. And then my dog caught on fire.
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad. Now you're crying because you feel so bad. It's not my job to make you feel better because you feel bad.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it is my job to try to make it up. And then let's say I have a son, Charlize Theron. That's not what I meant to name
Carlisle Theron.
I have a son, Carlisle Theron, Charlize. Charlize is his second middle name. Mm-hmm. You tried to help me. Anyways, if you would understand that, like, you know, I would like to think that he would try to make it up, like, you know, this wedge between the family. It's on, like, he would have to understand why your family might be still a little salty towards our family because of this thing that happened. He didn't cause it, but maybe there's some things he could do to help ease the pain.
What kills me is that this is the plot of so many stories. It's the plot of so many movies, of so many books, of so many things that my father did your father wrong, and now it is my job to, one, either avenge my father, or two, make peace with your family, because our families together can create this magical kingdom.
100%.
Y'all,
and we're
us or Instagram us something. Let us know what story you know, what the plot is, because we will put it in every episode. It's Romeo everywhere. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we love those stories, but we're not willing to do it ourselves. We're not willing to say, hey, listen, my people did your people wrong, so now let's make it right. And when I say your people did my people wrong and now I'm angry, get over it. It was so long ago. No, honey, it was not.
Fuck your tears. Yeah, no, that's not. And that's the thing, is that these stories have been going on. Like, you know, William Shakespeare plagiarized a story centuries ago about Romeo and Juliet. And so, like, these issues have been going on for centuries. And that's why it's like eye for an eye and the whole world does go blind, which is why I am, when the time is right, championing the folks on progressives and liberals to, like, how do we, like, you know, unification doesn't have to mean, like, completely forgive and forget, but it is, like, can we stop stabbing each other? And again, the economy is a great way if we can create less anxiety for folks. So the nation's GDP, the total value of goods and services and gross domestic product, could be up to 6% higher by 2028 if the racial wealth gap is closed. I will repeat, if we close the racial wealth gap, GDP is going to be up by 6%. In nominal dollars, consumption and investment will cost the U.S. economy between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion between 2019 and 2028. So racism is costing white Americans between $2,900 and $4,300 for every man, woman, and child. And by missing out on 4 to 6% growth, white people are literally robbing yourselves of money. You are being shitty and also hurting yourself from doing this, you know. And it even happened, like, back in the day when it was like, oh, like, when there was segregation and like businesses and stuff, white people were cutting themselves even back then from more being able to make money. You were making it so you had less clients that you could go to, or less clients that could come to you. It's just stupid. It's been done for the longest time. Wage stagnation started in the 1970s. We've not seen it really, you know, increase. Things to do. So listen, we just need to get more specific in what it is that we are talking about. We need to make sure
sorry, James, is this the call to action?
This is the call to action.
The promised call to action. Y'all, this is the call to action.
There we go. So it's even things like funding the EEOC. You see it when you're filling out paperwork for a job. That's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and they've been charged with enforcing federal laws. Their wages, their budget has not adjusted from 1980 to 2018. So they can't do their job. And their job is to make it illegal to discriminate against job applicants and employees based on race, color, religion, sex, national origin, age, disability, or genetic information. So we need to make sure they're being funded. So again, strategic, specific things that we can do to make sure that these communities who've been left at the bottom, who deserve it, who built this country, are not getting left behind. Like, let's not make Let's make, you know, Kamala Harris and Barack Obama the rule, not the exception. Okay. Mm. Can't just point to like Oprah Winfrey. She's the exception, not the rule. But we'll make it the rule. States also have the power as well. So you can even get all politics is local, making sure that like locally that your government has laws that are, you know, making it illegal to discriminate on these different things. California had the opportunity to make affirmative action legal again, and they decided to not. So we have work to do here.
I did not decide to not.
I'm like, why are we having this conversation? Yes, we should be having affirmative action is still necessary. No, y'all, we're not? Okay.
Y'all.
Lawmakers, so we've got to make sure that lawmakers are passing targeted policies that are going to boost household income for Black Americans in order to address these issues. So again, holding our lawmakers accountable, even especially at the local level as well. And we got to get specific in the laws and initiatives that we want on the ballot. Again, we can't just be like, we want race in the end, and they'll be like, okay, sure, yeah, whatever. But like, we want to be specific and strategic. What we want is equity and equality, and that is an easy way to achieve that and be specific in it is saying specific laws or things that we're wanting that are going to benefit Black people and the Black people specifically, their pocketbook, and then everybody else. It's going to be trickle up. I believe in trickle up economics. That's going to happen. Capitalism isn't going away, so we got to, you know, speak its language at this point. Reparations, it can take many different forms. Continue having these conversations, investigating into this. HR 40, I think, is the bill on reparations that has never been passed. It has gone every year in Congress. And this is going to help to ease the racial tensions, righting the wrongs. It's also going to stimulate the economy and well-being of the nation. It's an investment into our future. We talked about this before, dismantling and abolishing the prison industrial complex, which costs us more money. It's a bipartisan issue, and it allows Black people to participate in the economic system, spend money, pay taxes, and not live in prison. It's a negative energy that we're having to live in, and it just creates more mess. And
More of the same shit.
And so it's space for, and two, when you're allowing more people to participate in the economy and entrepreneurship and living their dreams and their creativity, when people aren't having to like survive, live in survival mode, but can live in thrival mode, we all are going to benefit. There's so much innovation that we are not even able to tap into because people are being left so far down. It costs us so much more. People having to live in fear, anxiety, and paycheck to paycheck. I think this is just a plug because I think Citigroup maybe paid for this article. But Citigroup is going to direct $1 billion towards helping close the racial wealth gap, including investing $550 million over the next 3 years and encouraging home ownership for people of color. So go to Citigroup, people. We're
not. Listen, ain't no way.
This turns out to be a giant commercial for Citigroup.
And then we get paid. No?
We should. That's how this also works. Pay Black people. And they're also going to give another $50 million to go towards capital investments for Black entrepreneurship. I'm also of the mind of let's make sure that white rule people have jobs too. I'm thinking about this in the sense of like, think about, I made the reference of, you know, when Biden won, it felt like the end of World War II. And I think I mentioned this before. We want to make sure that this is the end of World War II and not the end of World War I. And World War I, when we just left all the white folks in Germany to, like, you know, fend for themselves, they were like, oh, angry about the economy. They blamed certain groups of people and then took it upon themselves to try to, like, you know, take over the world, right? So it's like, let's make sure that everybody has, and again, specifically, you know, talking about the people who are at the bottom of the totem pole, but we gotta play this game smart, and we gotta, it's like a bad baby. Like some of these white people in the South, they're like a bad baby. We gotta make it, you know, you gotta play the game. And so it's like, no, we're not taking anything away from you. No, look, you get a job too. And just because this community has jobs doesn't mean that anything's being taken away from you, right? Like, it'll, to ease the tension, you know, we got to just, you know, make sure that these things are coming back, allow unions to come back in, and, you know, send the tech industry down to the South. Give them some, you know, tax credits to go down there. South ain't had a good economy since slavery. And you know what? It's not coming back. It's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, racism. And listen, yes.
We're not over here like the white suffragists. We're saying, come along with us. Thank you. Helped us out. Let's go. And that, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, 100%. I'm not out here. Like, yes, I'm looking out for me, but also, oh, you at the bottom too? Come with me, yo. Get on the raft. Let's go.
100%. Like, that is always, I think, so that is the difference between Black people. We consistently are, except for the Hoteps, but us as the rest of the community.
Can't.
Aside from the Hoteps, the rest of us, really, we are, like, we're about, because when you're down here at the bottom, you see how much it doesn't have to be this way, and we don't want anyone to be down here, because we see at the top, we know there's enough, right? And so, yeah, like, we're gonna, and also it is a little bit selfish, because I don't want them up to their own devices without, you know, good paying jobs, because this is what gets, this is where the fear and the anxiety and the otherism, and they're both taking away from something. And this is what I'm saying, is let's get strategic in all of our movements that we're talking about. We got to just play this game a lot smarter, because we won, but it was very close. And so strategic actions and ask, and if you can tie it back to economics, you're going to have a better case to win in terms of bringing more people in. And it's a democracy. Got to be able to find a way to bring people in so you can win. Ooh, there you go. Because y'all, I love winning. Felt so good. I don't want to lose again. So let's get strategic. And just remember, racism hurts everybody, not just spiritually, but also hurting your pocketbook.
You know, strategery, ho. No, that wasn't the. That's the best.
All right. Well, before we close on out of here, hope you enjoyed your Black economics class on racism. Just a quick little fact check. We had mentioned that about a vaccine that is coming to help us end this coronavirus. We had mentioned one, but there's actually two potential vaccines. One is from Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech, and the other by a biotechnology firm Moderna in partnership with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Oh, what can y'all do about my peanut allergy? Moderna vaccine is so far 95% effective, and Pfizer is so far 90% effective. So it's looking good, y'all, and good timing. In the last fact check, we weren't sure what was the minimum wage for Ohio. It is $8.50. Peep this, in Georgia, it is $5.15. So, Georgia senators, let's talk about economics. You know, it's very popular, a $15 minimum wage. So, to Warnock and Ossoff, let's let that be the message. Talk about the numbers. We know what to do. Let's look at the data. All right, y'all. It's been wonderful. Thank you all so much. Thank you to Sarah, our editor, and Sam Jackson, who's on the show and handling all of our social media. And thank you to all of you, even the folks who didn't like our usage of Donna. It doesn't matter. We're all saying Donald Trump, because let us never forget. And thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.